Hi, everyone. The uncertain landscape we've found ourselves in has inspired this conversation we're calling To Get to the Other Side. Sure, we want to get there, but can we move in a way that's deeply woven with our whole selves, one another, and those deepest threads we might call God? This week, Heidi Esposito shares some voices you might recognize and her own thoughts about the kind of grown-ups kids will need on the other side.
Have you ever tried to explain this world to children? I have kids, two of them. Have you ever sat down with a kid and tried to explain why there are Nazis marching in the exact place where you took them to the farmer's market and waited in line for pupusas? Have you ever tried to explain how a person who lies, assaults, insults, grifts, fakes, and hates can be elected into one of the most powerful jobs in the world? Have you ever tried to explain to them why they should be good people, how they should be good people in a world where there is so much bad, where they see people who look like them shot by police, murdered by vigilantes, run over at rallies? I have. And even though my whole job as a writer involves being so-called good with words, there are no words good enough to explain why things are the way they are and what we should do about it. It's too much. It's too big. It's too overwhelming. Maybe you don't have kids. Maybe you don't have to make this world make sense to children. So I ask you, how then do you make sense of it to yourself? Do you hide? Do you tell yourself that everything is fine? Do you convince yourself that you're doing everything you can? And do you make excuses for when you're not? I mean, do you know what to do? Like today, like right now in this moment, to help? Do you know how to be a good person? Are you a good person? Because me? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about any of us. What does a good person in this world even look like? I mean, what would they tell you if you could find the time to sit down and listen to them?
Did you ever have a scary dream? What did you do about it?
There might have been one good guy. On television, of all places.
Did you tell the people you love about it? The people who love you?
This old white guy in a zip-up cardigan and blue tennis shoes who played with puppets.
When I was a little boy and I had a scary dream, sometimes I'd get some paper and crayons and I would draw pictures about my dream.
I mean, is this the guy? Like, is this quiet dude staring into a camera and talking slowly about crayons? Is this the guy who can stand up to our very worst?
And sometimes that would help so much that I was able to get back to sleep real soon.
Mr. Rogers made it seem so easy, so casual to know how you're feeling, to be comfortable in your own skin. But it's not easy. It takes work. And that's actually what Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was all about. He was showing us how to do that work.
It really helps to talk about the way you feel. Because everybody has feelings all the time.
In a time like this, Fred Rogers has something we desperately need.
I think the real genius of Mr. Rogers having done his show and having it be targeted toward children is that what he has done is created a template for just how to recognize your feelings and know what it is, which is basically how you get to all the other stuff. It's how you grow. He taught us how to plant seeds.
He taught us to plant seeds. Seeds that were supposed to blossom into healthy, safe, caring, loving feelings for ourselves and then for all of our neighbors. And he had 3 decades on television to show us, to convince us, to guide us into making the kind of world he dreamed of. And yet, here we are. In a world that is, well, it's not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Once in a while, it hits me. What was I thinking about? And what was consuming my energies 6 months ago? It still kind of shocks me that I had no idea that a pandemic was heading my way, that I would be encountering unrest and uprising in my city, or that I would be radically confronted by my own racism and white body supremacy. Nor did I have any idea that I would be contemplating the weighty threshold of navigating what's next or how to do it. The words you just heard were from Carvel Wallace, a best-selling author, memoirist, and host of the award-winning podcast Finding Fred, lifting up the wisdom and the genius of Mr. Rogers. When I discovered this podcast, I literally went for a walk and listened to all 10 episodes back to back. Listening to this felt like the pause I needed and an amazing breath of fresh air in the middle of day after day staying at home. I thought that even though the podcast came out over a year ago, before the pandemic and quarantine, before the murder of George Floyd and the subsequent uprising and call for racial justice in our country, the words of Carvel Wallace and Mr. Rogers are timeless and true in the chaotic world that we are swimming in now. My name is Heidi Esposito, and I'm on staff with Fabric as the person who gets to think about and create experiences for children and youth that help them to become their best selves and learn the skills and tools it takes to weave deeply with others and wonder about what that big vision of love that is with us and all around us is all about. Oof, that feels like a big, important job. And as Carvel points out, it takes work, especially now when the world seems to be filled with so many big, hard things. There is so much in the work of Mr. Rogers and in the podcast Finding Fred, we could likely spend a whole series diving in. But today I want to call attention to just a few things that can possibly help us get through to the other side. I have played around with a number of job titles in my time with Fabric: Director of Children, Youth, and Family, Master of Fun, just to name a couple. But I think the one that I feel most at home with is being a champion for children. And it's probably why I'm drawn so to Mr. Rogers and the profound and revolutionary, yet simple work he committed his life to. I think Fred Rogers would have viewed himself a champion of children too. He was relentless about the work of helping kids to grow into the people our world needs them to be. Carvel was asking that question in a little different way, wondering about how and where we find the good people. I'm not quite as comfortable with the idea of good people because I think it automatically sets us up in a binary position of good and bad. I tend to think people are made up of a lot of both, and our job as humans is to find ways to tap into and grow our best whole selves. So as we're figuring out how to get to the other side and what we want that other side to look like, it has made me wonder who, as parents and grandparents and teachers, caregivers, and people that care about the future, do our kids need us to be? The magic of Mr. Rogers, who gave us 3 decades of lessons, was how he was able to slow down the pace, listen so deeply and seriously to kids, and take really big ideas and work through them in genius yet simplistic ways so that kids and adults alike could make sense of them. Mr. Rogers dreamed of the kind of world I think we're trying to catch a glimpse of on the other side, and he gives us a pretty good blueprint of how to get there. One of the things that I have felt an urgency for in the past few years was how do I help kids know and understand their feelings and those of others? No surprise that a majority of the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood episodes were about understanding feelings and developing those muscles of empathy. The challenge is that, well, surprise, humans are immensely complicated and have deep history with trauma that makes things like understanding what to do with our own feelings really complicated. In this world of violence and injustice and chaos, how in the world are we supposed to show empathy to everyone? Fred Rogers never shied away from the complexities of humans and their interactions with others. His magic was that he was teaching us these things through the simplicity of putting on his shoes or the conversation between puppets.
And in doing that, he was able to communicate complex concepts, moral, even spiritual concepts, concepts that even adults are still struggling to get a hold of.
Empathy is about like sort of finding the space between the parts that connect, right? Like we know as humans that we're connected to each other inextricably and irrevocably. Like we know that because we have to live in the world together and we have to rely on each other.
In working on this project, I'm like really struck with what seems to me an apparent paradox. I think that this question of empathy feels so complicated for some people because on the one hand, it's like, are you saying we should have empathy for rapists and racists and violent people and white supremacists? I think that makes people feel panicked about the idea of empathy. And I want to explore that a little bit with you. Like, how do you see those ideas working together?
Well, let me start here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start by saying, and I guess I'll just say whatever I say, and you guys can decide whether or not that's not appropriate. My father was in prison from the time I was about 6 months old until I was almost 30. And my dad was, I found out when I was 14 years old that my dad was in prison for sexual assault, that that's why he was there, and that that's why he would be there for however long. And my dad had also written me letters up until that point my entire life. I mean, just so many letters. You're the best girl in the world. I love you so much. You're my favorite girl. I think you're amazing. Never forget that your dad loves you. I'm thinking of you all the time. Nothing is better than your smile. You know, like all this kinds of stuff. And that had been, to be perfectly honest, like the basis of my self-esteem. And then to find out that this was true about my father was really, really tough for me, but it started the beginning of a real understanding the complexity of humanity, and that a person can be one person's hero and another person's worst nightmare and their monster and the thing that was hiding in the dark. And both of those things can be true about a person, right? Like it has to be. Like there was no other way to see this. He has both done a bad thing and a monstrous thing. And he has also, you know, been the thing that up until this point has kept me from feeling like I was alone in the world. And the truth is we're connected to these people for better or worse.
We all want to be good, to be friendly, to be neighbors, at least most of us. But when we see other people acting, well, bad, we get hurt. We lose our own balance. We get mad.
There are a lot of reactions to the state of our country, the state of the world, the state of society, all those things. There are a lot of reactions right now that it is perfectly understandable for people to be this angry. And so I don't really blame the people who are kind of hot-headed and lose their minds or, you know, like, or are so, seem so consumed by their anger that they're more angry than alive. Like, I don't blame them, but I do always think, man, who's going to be there and how are they going to deal when the anger stops being enough? Because it'll never be enough. It will never, ever, 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 ever be enough.
What if our journey to the other side included being able to see the whole of people, not just the monstrous parts, but the good as well, and to look beyond a single story about people, and to recognize that anger is never, ever going to be enough? I don't have the same experience as guest Ashley Ford shares in the first episode of Finding Fred, but can relate to those ideas within my own stories of being hurt by others and feeling really angry. Navigating through the separation with my husband of over 20 years, dealing with the significant mental health challenges of a loved one, and the breaking off of a lifelong friendship have left me asking the question Mr. Rogers wrote with such clarity in the song, "What do I do with the mad that I feel?" You have your own hurts within you and all around you that put you in that space too. There were many times that I found myself falling into the trap of seeing only the parts of people that were making me feel hurt and angry. It's hard work to look past the wrongs that we feel others have done to us and see the whole of that person. I love how Ashley Ford calls us in to try and find the space between us, the space where we can find connection, flaws and all. That seems like a hard enough job for me to handle for myself as an adult, but how in the world do we navigate helping our kids through these big, hard, and sometimes scary parts of life? In the first episode of Finding Fred, Carvel Wallace describes an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood that aired in 1968, at a time when there was great uprising and violence in our country. Sound kind of familiar? In this clip, listen for how Fred Rogers slows down the pace to take seriously and listen to the feelings of children. Notice how he didn't try and shield kids from the hard stuff, but showed them a path to work through it and make it manageable. And notice the things he was able to communicate in a land of make-believe.
That first episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood aired nationally in 1968. And the world in 1968, it felt probably a lot like the world does now. Scary, chaotic, and unspeakably violent. There was the war in Vietnam, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, and the protests and uprisings that came after. Anger and confusion hung over a lot of adults. And Fred's revolutionary move was to recognize that their kids were probably feeling it too.
The very first week of the show, when it premiered, had to do with the ruler of the make-believe land, King Friday the 13th, building a wall to keep out people and ideas that he didn't want in his kingdom. Now, that's creepy when you think about it in 2019.
David Bianculli knows a big TV moment when he sees one. He's watched a ton of them. He's been a television critic for over 40 years. And yeah, he loves The Sopranos, and he loves Breaking Bad, and he loves all the prestige television about people murdering one another and dissolving bodies in acid or whatever. But he's also fascinated with the first week of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and the things Fred Rogers was able to communicate in a land of make-believe.
Lady Elaine has been up to her tricks again, and she's moved the Eiffel Tower on the wrong side of the castle, and the tree has gone way from over here to the middle, and the clock is over here, and the fountain, well, it's just all mixed around.
Oh, he must be really upset.
He's furious about it, and he has established border guards.
In the neighborhood of make-believe? That sounds like a war.
The people in his kingdom, the other puppets, the other characters, send out balloons.
Boy, do you ever look nifty with all those balloons.
Over the wall that are nice, supportive balloons. Like, you know, we like you.
Love, this one says.
We want to get to know you. And they decide a wall and a barrier isn't a good thing. Now, this was, you know, 1968 and it's dealing with Vietnam, essentially. But it still resonates. I mean, much more than I'm comfortable with it resonating.
Vietnam was just one in what seemed like a laundry list of dark and difficult news items in 1968, because earlier that summer,
Bobby Kennedy was shot, and Fred Rogers asked for a primetime special because he understood that even if children were too young to understand who Bobby Kennedy was or what had happened, they would feel the vibe in their own homes about how upset their parents were, how upset their older siblings were, and wanted to talk about it. So in one sketch, he has Daniel Striped Tiger.
Just a minute, I want to show you something.
Asking Betty Aberlin, one of the human people who visits in the neighborhood, and
it's a balloon.
Oh, a balloon.
Could you blow it up for me?
Asked her to blow up a balloon and then let the air out and do it a few times. And he was concerned about something, this little puppet.
What about your air?
My air inside me?
Mm-hmm. What if you blow all your air out? Then you won't have any left, just like the balloon.
But people aren't like balloons, Daniel. When we blow air out, we get some more back in.
Oh. What does assassination mean?
And this is out of a children's hand puppet.
As far as you know, did any other children's shows address that topic?
No. And I've looked. I just ask you, in 2019, regardless of what the big news event is, can you imagine any children's television program that's on right now coming up almost with like a news special addressing the emotional consequences of it? It doesn't exist.
This special ran the evening after Bobby Kennedy died. Fred Rogers wrote this scene overnight. He was so tuned into his audience that he knew that this was something that children and their families absolutely needed to hear. Fred Rogers empathized with the kids who were feeling so scared and confused, so he talked right to those kids. And then he talked to their parents, too, about how to help the children.
The best thing in the world is for your children to be included in your family ways of coping with the problems that present themselves anytime, but particularly now, in this very difficult time in our nation.
Fred Rogers invented a neighborhood where people got together to talk about the things that confused them or scared them. And he used this place to show his viewers what you have to do to work through your emotions.
How important it feels that we find ways and create neighborhoods to talk with kids about these big news items and events happening around us in ways that help them to notice and feel their emotions and help them learn how to express them in healthy ways. It has also made me wonder about what balloon messages do we need as the grown-ups to come over our walls of anger and fear, anxiety and shame, in order that we can take down those walls and show up to have those important conversations with kids, to help them and us to learn coping strategies, and give kids the space to process and ask questions. It has been quite something to listen to the work of Carvel Wallace and Fred Rogers in the midst of 2020 and everything that has been happening. It makes me thankful to have access to their wisdom and thankful that this year there have been shows like Sesame Street that have continued speaking to kids about things like the pandemic and about being anti-racist. My kids are grown, although still at home, and during this time of quarantine, we all became acutely aware of our need to find those coping strategies that Mr. Rogers was talking about. Even when we couldn't quite put our finger on what was making us feel anxious, we knew it was there. And I would say staying at home definitely allowed us more time for slowing the pace down. We found that art and exercise were really good coping skills for us, and surprise, being intentional about what and how much media I was consuming was also important. I was also spending time during quarantine working through Rezma Menekin's book, My Grandmother's Hands. And although it isn't a practice I'm totally comfortable with yet, finding ways to connect my body and centering is something that I'm experimenting with and can see how it helps me to feel and name the emotions I have. I can see how these centering practices could be adapted to do with even very young children. But even if I didn't engage in centering or coping strategies with my kids, being centered and grounded allowed me not to be quite as reactive and to help me to talk about what was going on around us in more empathetic ways. If you were to ask me before or even at the beginning of the pandemic, if helping kids to learn about their feelings and how to have empathy was the key for thriving through and post-pandemic, I think I would have wholeheartedly agreed. But now, I don't think that is enough. The past couple of months have highlighted for me our country's need for change, both internally as individuals and systemically as a country. Feeling empathy can't be the end. It needs to lead us into action. There's a famous episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in which Fred Rogers shares a kiddie pool foot bath with Officer Clemens, the black police officer in the neighborhood. This simple act was hugely radical for the time and serves as an example of Fred just showing his viewers how to love someone. Sometimes, he tells Officer Clemens, just a minute like this will really make a difference. In that scene, he never spoke about race or how that might have been viewed as political or radical in that time. He simply modeled kindness, humanity, and doing the right thing, even when it was hard. Listen to part of episode 2 of Finding Fred, in which Fred Rogers describes how attitudes are caught, not taught, and the importance of modeling through loving the clay.
We hear a lot about empathy these days. The word is everywhere, really. T-shirts and tote bags and Instagram accounts all reminding us that we can choose empathy as if that's all it takes to fix a world that so often feels broken. But if we want to change the world, then we have to take our empathy and do something with it. The entirety of the episode in which Fred soaks Francois's feet is incredibly simple, but it's also incredibly powerful. Fred was a master of modeling good behavior for kids because he knew just how effective modeling could be. Here he is in an interview from 1994.
I was at this nursery school, and the director had invited this man to come and sculpt in front of the children. She said, I don't want you teaching sculpting. I want you simply to sit with the children and do what you feel you'd like to do with the clay. Well, the kids started using clay, that medium, in the most wonderful ways. And that wouldn't have happened if this gifted sculptor hadn't loved clay right in front of them.
This idea of just doing what you love in front of people as a way of teaching it, of spreading it, loving the clay, as Fred would later call it, has been sitting with me since I first heard it. It echoes ideas I've heard in so many disparate contexts. Show, don't tell, attraction rather than promotion. So in that sense, it's a timeless, almost interfaith concept like love thy neighbor or do unto others. And the other thing about it is that rather than pushing me to become some hero, some great leader of men, the idea of loving the clay just calls on me to be the best version of myself that I can be, and then to let that be seen.
Loving the clay calls on us to be the best version of ourselves that we can be, and then calls on us to let that be seen. The first time I listened to this episode, I had tears running down my cheeks as I heard this part. It speaks to why I do what I do. My clay in this reference is my love of children. I feel like I'm at my best when I'm playing and building relationships with kids. It brings me a lot of joy. And I think that translates to kids as you matter and you are important in ways that speak so much louder than if I was trying to teach about self-esteem or feeling valued. Take a moment to imagine your clay. What is it that is such a part of you and brings you joy? Now imagine, how are you letting that be seen by the world? This idea of modeling stretches beyond the clay that brings us joy. It's also about the values we love: kindness, equity, integrity. You can fill in the blank with your own list. Our society has grown a love of programs and scheduled moments. We have learned to slot in kindness and helping into our lives, like scheduling in soccer practice or piano lessons. We care about hunger when we show up at Loaves and Fishes, or we care about the environment on Earth Day. We love justice when we see a show during Black History Month. Those agencies and activities are good and, of course, serve a need. But if we truly want to plant and grow the seeds of kindness and equity and integrity, the qualities we desperately want to be loud and strong on the other side, we have to help them to show up in the everyday, small moments kind of ways, like feeding the fish.
My favorite, like, recurring Mr. Rogers moment is him feeding his fish.
This is my friend, Eve Ewing. Eve is a scholar and a writer and a professor and a poet and a comic book writer. She's, like, everything.
You know, I just be writing, you know, I just write, like, essays and stuff as well.
And about those fish.
Must feed the fish.
Whenever he feeds the fish, there's like this little jazz piano riff that plays.
Give them a little food.
Mimicking like the actions of the fish as they go up and like open and close their mouths to get the food. Seeing this adult engage in this small moment of caring for another living creature that requires just like a pause of patience and quiet is just so beautiful to me. He was showing us how to be good, not just through saying like, be good, don't do drugs, don't rob people, whatever, but actually just like doing it, like feeding the fish or helping your neighbor with something or being nice to somebody that you know that other people are maybe not nice to all the time.
Seeing the beauty in those small, consistent acts of kindness that make us pause and notice was how Fred Rogers was a master of modeling those really important values in such simple ways that invite all of us to join in. I have to wonder, with what is happening now in our country, what does modeling look like for me as a white-bodied person? In this time of quarantine, I had one of those smack-me-in-the-head moments as I was learning about my own white fragility. It came when I was engaging in an activity as part of a class that challenged me to examine the roots and the soil of racism that had been part of my history, the world I grew up in. One of the things that I realized during this exercise was how I viewed the role of the helper, the one bestowing kindness. You probably are familiar with the Fred Rogers quote about looking for the helpers. In the world that I grew up in, white-bodied people were the helpers. If there was a crisis or a place to help, it was the job of white bodies to show up and to fix and to serve. I realized that what had been modeled to me was this way of positioning so that I could keep a feeling of superiority and keep a feeling of comfort and separation. It has been a hard thing to face, looking within myself, wondering, aren't I a good person? Isn't helping and being kind who I want to be and what I want to model to the children in my life? Right now, as we're looking across that proverbial road, I think it feels trickier. Wanting to be careful that we aren't leading with privilege or in a performative way or minimizing and speaking over Black voices. I think that Fred was right that walking the talk is the way that we nurture and help children to grow to be kind and caring people. But how we model that is just as important as what we model. Recently, with some Fabric Kids, we shared a book that led us to a conversation about belonging and about how one of the characteristics of belonging is inviting each other in. I love that small but powerful shift in thought and language that says, to create belonging, I am both the inviter and the invited. I think this idea deserves saying and sitting with one more time. Modeling important values to our kids as we navigate through to the other side is so important, and how we model them is even more important. I love how Carvel Wallace grapples with Fred's faith and what it means to practice grace while accepting how broken and flawed we are as human beings. Even though Fred Rogers was an ordained minister, he never spoke of religion or faith in any of his episodes. But he lived and breathed his faith and his relentless pursuit of unconditional love within his work and in his relationships with his family and the people that he encountered. And isn't that relentless pursuit of love what God is seeking in us and for us? My hope and my prayer is that as we get to the other side, whatever shape that takes, I sure hope that we, the grown-ups, will have found ways to model loving our neighbors, all our neighbors, in the ways of Mr. Rogers and in the ways of that big vision of love that God wants for us and through us. I'd like to end by sharing this clip of Francois Clemens, the man who played the police officer in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, sharing his own memory of that kind of unconditional love he received from Fred. As you listen, notice the ways that Fred persistently sent the message that you matter, you belong, and you are loved.
Ultimately, Francois found in Fred a kindred spirit, a willing, creative collaborator, and a true friend who loved him in a way that Francois hadn't quite experienced before.
Fred Rogers recognized something in me before I did. When I got with Fred and he began to do these little extra things that was over and beyond the call of duty, I was confused by that. Why is this white guy sticking with me? Why is he so persistently wonderful? So when he said, you're special, and you know how, just by being you, and I like you, just the way you are. And you make every day a special day.
One instance in particular stands out to Francois many years later. Mr. Rogers was wrapping the show the way he always wrapped the show, changing his shoes, removing his sweater.
You've made it a special day for me. You know how? By just your being yourself.
Yeah.
There's only one person in the whole world like you. And I like you just the way you are. See you tomorrow.
I don't even know how to explain it, except we had locked eyes all the way across this big studio. And I dared to say to myself, he's talking to me. But he talks, he says that every time I come to a show that he's filming, he's saying that. Why was he saying that to me today? There was something in his voice, something in his eyes. It was important to me to ask him, Fred, were you talking to me? I had never had somebody say that to me in my whole life. Oh, Lord, I can't tell you when he said, yes. Yes, I've been talking to you for 2 years, and you heard me today. There was such a divine explosion. I can't explain it any other way. It was inside of me. It was outside of me. It was in him. It was in our eyes. I saw divinity. That's the only thing I can tell people. I have never experienced anything like it since. And I just collapsed in his arms.
As I listen to Francois share this story, I can't help but listen and imagine that is what God is trying to say to me, to us. Maybe it's through the voices in our lives of people like Fred Rogers, or sitting quietly in the woods, listening and noticing and taking in its grandeur, or when I'm able to bravely show up as me, flaws and all. I don't know why it took Francois 2 years to hear that relentless message of love from Fred, or why I can only occasionally catch a glimpse of God's love for me and the world. But isn't that what we want to hold on to as we try and become the people and world we are hoping for on the other side?
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend, and you can find resources for discussions and other notes about this episode at our website, fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out to us on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.